Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha, Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha, Namo Buddha, Namo Dharma, Namo Sangha. And my Tibetan teachers would always add bodhicitta prayer and the four immeasurables. So, in short, may all beings be happy. In short. Yes. And let me take a moment to say how I see the week in front of us. I've made a little comment this morning already. When I meditate with you, there is a great risk that I will say something. You have noticed this, huh? And this is due to my dear teacher Gyanrin Rinpoche, when he was still alive, and I was starting to offer meditation days in the monastery. So the lay people from the surrounding, they could come and meditate with us. That means with me in that case. And I was offering them style Vipassana. I was offering them great periods of silence and here and there some questions and answers. And he came in. He was living next door, really next door. Meditation hall, the temple would be here. And that little room over there, that would have been his apartment. Yes? So he comes in, he looks through the door, and he observes, and then he says, Lindrup, that's my Tibetan name, Lindrup, huh? The spontaneous one, spontaneously accomplished, that's what Lindrup means. And he calls me and says, Lindrup, you shouldn't let them sit like this. They just sit in their habitual patterns, they only sit in their karmic soup. There is nothing real happening there. You have to disturb their practice. You have to talk. And so, with this instruction, while he was still alive, I started talking meditation. And I learned over these years, now we are talking, I was at that time 34 years old, and now I'm 65. So, I've been talking meditation for 30 years, right? Not all the time, so the idea is, yes, I appreciate your silent meditation and I appreciate myself to be silent. Huh? It is each time, a little, yes, give me a little kick because I love to remain long periods in silence. The idea is to take you a little bit by the hand to guide you, not too close and not with too many big times of, just letting you free. So actually, I'm playing the role of sati in your practice. I play the role, the voice of the teacher plays the role of what will be at home when you come home. Will be your inner guru. The role of the outer guru is to train the inner guru. So, your inner guru receives a training when listening to the outer guru, the outer teacher. The outer teacher shows you how to guide one's own mind. So, I speak from my practice. What I do is, I always tell you what I have just practiced. I never tell you what I will practice together with you, but actually what I say is that which I have just practiced. And that's why it comes out pretty authentic, because I speak from the experience of just now. Not something that is in my mind that should happen, but that which has just happened. And then to some extent, not of course all, I communicate it to you, hopefully in a way that you don't feel too much manipulated. Hopefully. I know it's a little bit sometimes disturbing, and you might sometimes react with a little aversion. Oh, again, You know, he's again talking and again stirring up the silence, and I was just feeling so good. And now he comes again. He has another suggestion. And, you know, but we will continue doing this. I will continue to bother you until the end of the retreat. Okay? This is my promise. Not all sessions. Not all. Okay, because I also don't like it so much to bother other people, but I feel it my sacred duty to do that. Yes, it's like I have seen it work over so many years with so many people, and I do know that it communicates very essential Dharma. It's really communicating to you how to do it. And then these audios which we have from these guided meditations, which here our team, especially Yossi and Nava, are recording, then they will be at your disposition. You can listen to them again at home, and you can always click on pause. Stop. Pause. Pause, and you stay with the effect of the instruction you have just meditated, and you deepen it a little bit, you repeat it to yourself, yes? But like this, we accumulate quite a number of guided meditations for you, which are very practical instructions. Yes, and this is like my offering to you, that you have know-how, how to do instruction for at home, which you can listen to, but please don't listen all the time. The idea is that you train your inner guru, and then maybe you take some notes of what you hear in your own language, and then you put the audio aside and you guide yourself in a structured way. And then with the time, sometimes you listen to the audio a second or a third time, but please don't listen all the time. I've found people who have they like lean back every day, they have the audio and they are guided through the meditation, and it's super. The Lama is guiding them through, but the inner guru is not getting stronger. So this will not help much when we die, right? Yes, we are preparing for times when we really need to master our mind. Yeah, and that's the time when it is really important. Everything else, I mean, times of crisis are already important, and especially times when your battery runs low. Yes, when you don't have any electricity, you need to be able to meditate without audios. And yeah, you have to be independent. So these guided meditations, I never know how I feel when I sit down, like last meditation. I felt, no, it's very important to just keep silent. And after half an hour, I felt, okay, now is a good time to give you this key instruction, the six dharmas of Tilopa, which I will explain in a minute. Yes? So it will be like this. I will try to find out what is the best from my little resonance. Yeah, it's, of course, no absolute knowledge, and it's never good for everybody. So there's always some people for whom it is not so perfect. And we will go like this, very much practicing, and then an explanation of the practice, which is also like helping your inner guru to wake up. Because in the teaching, when you receive the explanation of the practice, you understand more. And this understanding actually will be what guides you later on. It's not repeating the words of the teacher. You're not being trained to be a parrot or something, a Dharma parrot. You know, it's not like this. It has to make sense to yourself. So from your own understanding, due to listening, contemplating, and the meditative experience, then your inner guru grows. And this process of the inner growth of the guru in the Mahamudra tradition goes until you have the first stable awakening. In the Vipassana tradition, you would call this Sotapanna, stream enterer, but it is a little bit more. The first Bodhisattva Bhumi, it has to be stable. So that means the inner guru, we say, is awake. When a person, a yogi, yogini, when he or she has an emotion that by herself she finds back into a direct understanding of the nature of mind. So it doesn't have to be in the emotion, but at least the same day, this capacity to be able to find back into a direct experience of awakening, that's what we call the stable stream entry, the stable first bodhisattva path. And only then can you say that your inner guru is sufficiently awake so that you can do long stretches of your life without meeting the outer guru, because you have now the developed capacity inside of you. Makes total sense, right? It is like every good other training. Yeah, you are. If you want to make bread, then your chief baker, he tests you to make good breads. And if you can produce good breads day after day after day, then you can open your own bakery. Yes, it's like this. And it's the same with everything you learn. And here it's about entering the path of liberation and becoming independent of the outer inspiration, the outer guidance. The inspiration has to come from you. You have become a stable practitioner, and whatever the challenges in your life, you can liberate the stress. You know how to find the way back into the source, as I was calling it. Remember the source, which is the basic nature, the ground nature of our being, without the veils. So these are moments of touchdown and the non-dual mind. It's a different expression for the same. So this is where we are going, and it will not happen now in this course, and this retreat, but we are going in that direction. So basically we are training your inner wisdom. Your inner guru is your inner wisdom, your inner understanding, and self-reliance. We are training in self-reliance. And the further students go in self-reliance, you know, like if I take the example of guiding individual retreats, self-retreats, people come to me for self-retreats, and they don't have instructions every day. We have instructions once a week, sometimes twice a week. In the beginning, when people are not experienced in such self-retreats, I need to see them for personal interview. If it's a short retreat, beginning, middle, and end, then they get more experience. Even if they do 2 weeks of retreat, then I see beginning, middle, and only 3 times. But over the time, my more experienced students, I speak with them about their practice only once every 3 months or something. You know, they have become very self-reliant, they have a good understanding of the Dharma. They can rely on that, and they know when to see me. Yeah, they know when it becomes somehow a little difficult, they're not quite sure how to handle the present challenges, the development, and then they need to see the teacher for the one-on-one interview, one-on-one talk. They all have the written Dharma or the audio Dharma available all the time. So to check with the written Dharma or audio talks, this can happen anytime. And most practitioners, they do it every day to read a little bit of Dharma, one paragraph, one page, you know, just to have a little stimulation for their practice. So this is basically the way Mahamudra is communicated, and it's pretty much the same in other traditions, only that some traditions, they don't do much personal guidance, which in the Mahamudra tradition is very important. And here, seemingly, you have a good tradition, a good practice of personal guidance. This is something I appreciate very much in Tuvana. It's very, very nice to see. It's very well established. Now, this book, which I brought you now, this blue Bible, is called Mahamudra, The Ocean of True Meaning, or could also be the definite meaning, the reliable, the true meaning. So this is written by the 9th Karmapa in the 16th century. The 9th Karmapa is the first one in Tibetan history who has manifested this capacity to predict his own reincarnation. So half of them, we are now with the 17th, half of them have even left a letter telling exactly family and place where they're going to be reborn. Others have given oral instructions, some have not left any instructions. The very great masters, who you can say, who have mastered birth and death to such an extent that they can even predict where their mind stream will manifest again. Very capable masters. Yes, and they are said to be the continuation of Guru Rinpoche, the Padmasambhava, who predicted that his acting. Padmasambhava Guru Rinpoche was the one who brought the Dharma from India to Tibet. Others helped. There were two other great masters who started that, but when difficulties arose, they called their master Padmasambhava, who came and anchored the Dharma in Tibet in the first wave of transmission. And he predicted that in the future there will be a continuation of his activity for 21 incarnations under the name of Karmapa. And we are now at the 17th. And then it will, the activity will change. And he gave the names for each one of them and so on. Yeah, it's like a wonderful thing how they take care of humanity. Yes, it's incredible. This is bodhisattva work. This is what a real bodhisattva is. You know, one coming back again and again, no matter how difficult the situation is. The 16th Karmapa went with the Dalai Lama together to see Mao Zedong, to see what they can do in order to avoid war and so on, in very difficult times. And they had to both leave the country and continued to work in northern India and in the world and so on and so on. Lots of things to say. Very reliable Mahamudra instructions. And this book was written in Tibetan, of course, Tibetan block print, for lamas. So for people like myself, and this book teaches lamas how to teach their students in Mahamudra. This was the original idea of this book. And it takes us through the preliminaries, the four thoughts which turn the mind towards the Dharma, these four general preliminaries, then the four special preliminaries with the prostrations, the purification mantra practice, the mandala offering, the guru yoga, then the four specific requisites in order to achieve realization. What are these four necessary conditions to realize the nature of mind? And then after that, after these three types of preliminaries, then it goes into the explanation of the general points on body and mind, something which is to be respected for all practice, followed by explanation of the shamatha practice, calm abiding, intuitive insight, vipassana practice, and then how to deepen the insight of vipassana in Mahamudra practice, how to overcome obstacles, how to dissolve misunderstandings in the practice of insight, you know, and giving some additional instructions how to enhance the practice once you have entered the first bodhisattva stage, the path of seeing, yeah, this first bodhisattva bhumi, how to continue then until you reach an always wider awakening. So this book was the one where Geno Rinpoche said, I mentioned it in the other group which was leaving. This book wasn't translated. And when I was in retreat, I was together with Hendrik Envali, who spoke Tibetan fluently. And Geno Rinpoche asked them to give this book to make a translation for us, for me and my then wife, ex-wife Irene, Lama Irene. She's still a Buddhist nun. And so we received the first translation of this book in pencil writing. And every lesson in this book, we needed to realize the meaning of that chapter, of that lesson, before we received the next lesson. In the beginning, it went quite smoothly. We practiced. And we understood, we received the next lesson, but I tell you, there was a place in the inside section, we got stuck for 7 months. We just didn't get the point of what was the inside to read in that part of the instructions. And then after that was mastered, then we received further instructions. And later on, Gen Rinpoche wanted this to be published, and it was then that he said, this Mahamudra teaching has to reach the ends of the globe, and he said, even to South Africa, which was the furthest point he could think of. Yes? So his idea was that everybody who has the karma, the merit, to understand deep Dharma should have the possibility to have access to this. And it's available on the internet. There's the English and the German. Here I brought you the English version. And although there are passages in there which are only meant for lamas who are teaching, but you will probably, those of you who are motivated, like you said in the group, that you are very motivated, this would be the kind of book to look into, but you need then to listen to the audios. It is this book that I explained in Brazil and in Greece in 7 years. It takes 7 years to go through the whole book, 7 years of 2 weeks of teaching. And this is more teaching than what we do here. Yes, so it's already a lot what we do here, but it's more hours of teaching per day, something like 5 hours or 6 hours or something like this. So just to tell you, and this is what our teacher Gen Rinpoche, among other texts, but we went through with him. I was following in Tibetan when he was teaching, and he was explaining every sentence to us, and you know, and then we took our notes and so on, and we went through this whole text, and this was, you can say, the backbone of the 3-year retreat was to understand this text. This is a clear Mahamudra transmission, and you need to receive it from someone who holds that transmission. One can read it, but one will not understand everything. But one can take a lot of inspiration. And now I conclude my long explanation. The 6 dharmas of Tilopa are found in here. Okay? Yes, the 6 dharmas of Tilopa are part of that general section on the key points of on the mind. And it starts in lesson 22, continues in lesson 23. So this is on the pages 123 following. I have a new book here, which I bought just before coming to Greece, because the other one was falling apart. I was using it so much. And I make a little notch here on the page, yes, so that you can find, when I leave it here, you can find the right page easily with the instructions of the 6 dharmas of Tilopa. And now I will give them again. Tilopa, yes. Tilopa was an Indian master, and his main student was Naropa, who was, before he met Tilopa, he was one of the 4 main scholars, the 4 abbots of Nalanda University. The Buddhist University of Nalanda in the 11th century had around 100,000 students. It was enormous. Just imagine the logistics of how to find water and how to provide toilets for all these people. Just think of that in those times. It was an incredible seat of learning, and Naropa was one of the four heads of this monastery and extremely learned. Now, his intuition told him that he hadn't really understood. He was so learned, and somehow this emanation of a Buddha like Tara appeared in the form of a crooked lady with a hunchback. You know, when he was studying in the garden, then in Naropa, where he was studying his text, then this crooked lady, old lady came and said, "Do you understand what you are reading?" Naropa looked at her and said, "I understand the words, but do you understand the meaning?" And he was so sincere, he said, "No, not really." And it was due to that manifestation of this female, then the lady dissolved into light and wasn't seen anymore. It then, due to that moment of being checked on by the Buddhas, he realized that all his learning wasn't enough. And he had a dream and so on, and he went to search for this Tilopa. An outrageous story about Tilopa, but anyhow, he found him, and some of you have heard this one wonderful Ganges Mahamudra, the song of realization of Tilopa at the Ganges when he teaches Naropa and gives the key instructions of Mahamudra. It's a little bit longer. It's not a long text, but it's only a few pages, but very profound. A spontaneous song. And Naropa was the teacher of Marpa, the first Tibetan in this lineage. Yes, and Marpa brought it then back to, brought it to Tibet. And his students are then the beginning of this lineage from which I'm talking. Okay, so just to give you a little idea in what where we are at. So again, Tilopa talks to Naropa. And he gives him key instructions on meditation, so to speak. Do not reflect on the past. Do not anticipate the future. Do not think about the present. Do not analyze. Do not meditate. Leave the mind natural as it is. So these six instructions have become a good way to show the Mahamudra approach, which is not pretending that we can do anything to realize the nature of mind. Whatever we do with effort will remain in the realm of samsara. So how do we go about this? First, I need to explain each of the six sentences, and then we have a look at how it is, the whole thing together. When the Karmapa sets out to explain this, and he quotes other teachers like Kampopa, Gotsangpa, and so on, then he says, well, actually, Mahamudra does not depend on cutting through the thinking about the three times, past, present, and future. Actually, Mahamudra does not need to stop the thinking process. This is normally not necessary, because you can realize the nature of the thinking process to be the nature of mind. However, if beginners are not told to stop thinking about past, present, and future, then their mind will never become clear enough to see the true nature of what is going on. So we must tell beginners to stop all this cogitation, all this thinking about what usually goes on in their life. And we must make it clear, this is the first process of understanding, that the past does not exist. You can think about the recent events in the Middle East, but you are just making a present thought. The past is gone. Okay? Very clear. You might have lost friends, acquaintances, might have lost dear people. All of that is past. Okay? Very clear. The past is only here as a present. We bring the past alive all the time with our thinking process. We make it into a new present. The present changes the past. It's not the past. We are not reliving the past. We are living a present moment where our beautiful memories of childhood, to think of something else, you know, we have beautiful memories. The beautiful memories are also past and they become present now by the way we like to think about the beautiful moments of our childhood. They are just an enjoyable entertainment in the present moment. And we think we think about the past, but we don't think about the past. There is no past to think about. We give life to ideas that we project into a past, but actually they are present. And they are very active in us. So actually we are just in that moment creating karma. We're in that moment actively producing something in our mind which will have further consequences. The more we indulge in it, the more it will grow. It will become stronger. So one thing in meditation is when we meditate, I'm not talking about normal life, we need to learn from our mistakes from the past. We need to learn from history. It's very important. We need to, you know, the past is an object of reflection and we need to learn many lessons from it. So not to repeat the errors and to rather learn from the good things of the past. But in meditation, this is not the point to reflect about it because this would be constructive thinking. Constructive thinking is to reflect about the past. It's a contemplation. We can sit down. We can reflect about the past. We can take a book. We can take notes. We can talk with someone. It's a different activity. In meditation, we need to step out of the identification with the so-called past, which is the karma of now that we are producing. Every time that I think that I'm still the Tilman of yesterday, the Tilman of 10 years ago, or like I just mentioned some events 30 years ago, or, you know, hey, this is an illusion. This is an illusion. I can't even find the Tilman of now. How about the Tilman of the past? This is just a good story. Okay? So stop dwelling on stories. Be radical about that. Cut the thinking about the past because it's not an object of reflection. It doesn't exist. It's a production of the present. Okay? So this is very important. In meditation, please do not reproduce the past. And please don't believe that it is the past that is coming back. It is the present that arises due to conditioning in similar images that remember, that remind you of the past. It's very important to be clear about that. Now the same thing goes for the future. We all know, without thinking about the future, we will not be able to make provisions for the winter, we will have nothing in the fridge, we would have, you know, it's like, we can't work. We have to make plans. And a good mother makes plans for the whole family. A good mother in Tibetan is in Tibetan culture, a good mother is someone when an unexpected visitor comes and everybody thinks, but we have nothing to offer, she always has a place from where she can manifest magically yet another soup, yet another something to share with the guest. That's because she anticipates. Yeah? She anticipates the future. So anticipating the future and making good plans for it, this is a very constructive, very necessary activity in our normal life. But in meditation, we learn to disidentify also with all our projects, all our ideas about the future, because then we put on really the strong light of insight and we see it's mere speculation. What the future will bring, whether it will bring war or paradise, we don't know. This is just likely it will bring one or the other. And our clinging to our ideas of the so-called future is actually, from the point of view of meditation, just another scenario of ego clinging. It's one of the favorite projections of mind to dwell on what will be after the retreat, what will I do with my life, how will I give meaning, when will I be finally enlightened, what will I do after enlightenment? You know, it's like, yes, all of these questions I've already heard in retreats, and it's just complete distraction. It is, in the meditation, only distraction. It is the play of ego-centered bhakshaks, which are in Tibetan. This means habitual tendencies. It's the habitual tendencies of being preoccupied with the future, just as we are preoccupied with the past. So then the third time is the present. We talk so much about the present and being in the present. It is difficult to find the present. It is very difficult. The moment I say present, that word is already gone. It's only a memory now. The memory is in the present, but the word is in the past. You know, we are always too late. To really catch the present is impossible because the moment we try to grasp, it has changed already. So don't even try. The radical meditation instruction is do not think about the present. And now, for those of you who have encountered some good teaching to label the present, for example, to say thinking when you think, or to say pride when you have pride, or to say, you know, these labeling practices, they are very good because they create a disidentification. You see what's going on, and because of labeling it, you don't identify so much with it. But from the point of view of Mahamudra practice, you're behind. This has already happened. The moment you saw it, you don't need to label it anymore. Because you already saw it, it's gone. The labeling always comes too late. Okay? So don't even think about the present. Don't think if the present is fine or not so fine, and just experience it. Just be, and this being is this what I described to you. This is why I spend so much time describing to you the five aspects of timeless awareness. Timeless means always there. In a way, it's eternal, but also timeless, cannot be caught. There's always the spaciousness, there's always the fluidity, there's always the ungraspable nature, there is the lucidity, and there is the creativity. It's always there. You become familiar with that, and you will see it working in the now, but you will never be able to grasp it. So, not to think about the present is saying don't try to grasp the present. It's the same instruction. Yes? Thinking is a form of grasping. Thinking here in this context is a form of trying to solidify the present. So stop solidifying the present experience of now. So the present as a thing cannot be found. A now, a flowing experience in the now, yes, can be clearly experienced, and all the more so if there is no clinging. Then the experience of this very vivid now becomes all-encompassing, all-pervading. There's nothing more than that. And that's when it becomes timeless. Then timeless means we don't even compare with past anymore. Timeless means we don't even see the change. We are the change. We don't see the change. Timeless means that we even stop comparing with what was before, with the last breath. We are so much in the now, we don't care about the last breath. We don't care about the last moment of experience. We are completely present. So this idea of impermanence and change is a very relative one. What we can say is that any observing mind, it just finds it impossible to grasp, to describe the qualities of the now. Every attempt at describing the now fails, because the now has so many facets, so many aspects that we live, like right now, it's happening now, I'm talking about now. As it's happening now, all the facets of what we live now even if we had hours to describe it, we couldn't describe it. There's so many nuances, subtleties to this experience. So, keep silent concerning the now. No comments. Just live it. Be it. And then come two more instructions. Do not analyze. Now, this is one of the wonderful preoccupations of meditators. They wait for the first bhumi and first jhana, the second jhana, and so on, and they analyze whether it's really empty or not, or whether, and so on. All this wonderful analysis of the meditator, you know. Is this really now the perfect moment? You know, this kind of question, you know, this is analysis. Is this liberation? The moment you have such thoughts, it's definitely not it. Okay, this is one thing for sure. So the Mahamudra instructions, they are very radical on this point. Stop analyzing, don't use analysis, which was so useful before. It helped so much from the ordinary point of thinking. It's very good to know where you are on the path, and how you will look into your meditation, and what is your hindrance, and what you can improve, and which remedies to apply, and all of that is very helpful. Same as anticipating the future and learning from the past. It is very helpful to analyze. But when you really come to the point of practice, of how to enter realization, you have to stop also that. We have to stop that, analyzing. So basically it means stop caring whether you have a good meditation or a bad meditation. Just be. Because the moment you care, it's definitely a bad meditation. You understand? It's like, yeah, it's good that you laugh. I'm happy that you get that sense of humor which is in there. Because they were all laughing their heads off. Every Mahamudra master giving this instruction was, of course, laughing his heads off, because it's cutting through all the habitual tendencies. It's exactly what we are doing all the time, and it is that which obstructs awakening. In awakening, we have to forget ourselves. We have to really completely forget that someone is meditating. And this is the fifth instruction, do not meditate. Meditation in that sense, when we say do not meditate, means anything artificial. Do not fabricate a meditation. Do not fabricate a meditation on love, a meditation on emptiness, a meditation on dukkha, on anicca, whatever is your preferred thing. You know, don't fabricate a jhana experience, you know, let it be. That's the sixth one. Leave the mind natural means leave it up to surprise. There's no definition what natural is. Leave it as it is. When you respect the five first ones, the sixth one will be obvious. It will be that which is left. And that's why I find, although one says in modern neuropsychology, one says the mind doesn't understand knows. Yeah? Do not. One doesn't understand. One understands very well, actually. One understands very well that this is not helpful. And one, actually, when one understands, one drops thinking about the past and the future and so on, like a famous hot potato, in order not to get burned. You know, like you pull out something from the hot sand, you know, you have been baking something in the hot sand, or, you know, you drop it, you leave it. If you don't understand, you'd still play around with it, and you will be well entertained in your meditation. Okay. Until you understand. We should say the sixth in Hebrew. Lila, will you be so kind and please take the microphone? Maybe you have yours in. Yes. Mm-hmm. Of course. No, it's for the recording. Yes, and the important things should all go on the recording. Yes.
So, אז ששת הדרמות של טילופה. אז הראשון זה לא להרהר בעבר. השני זה לא להרהר בעתיד, לא לצפות לעתיד. השלישי זה לא לחשוב על ההווה. לא צריך את ההסבר, נכון? כי הוא הסביר את הכל מאוד מאוד יפה. כן. הרביעי זה לא לנתח, להתחיל לשאול, הגעתי, לא הגעתי, מה קורה לי עכשיו, כאלה, לא לחפור בחוויה שלנו. החמישי זה לא לתרגל מדיטציה כהבנייה מנטלית, אפשר להסביר את זה. לא להחליט שעכשיו זה מה שאני מתרגלת, ולקחת את המיינד לשם ולתרגל מטה, לתרגל אנליזציה של הדוקה, למשל, לא להיכנס לתפקיד המדיטייטור. והשישי זה להשאיר את המיינד שיהיה טבעי, שזה בעצם פועל יוצא של חמשת האחרים. כשאנחנו מתרגלות את חמשת האחרים, אז השישי עולה מעצמו.
And now, please, to do me a favor and them a favor, go through again and give a little bit more explanations. You can repeat
okay. Sure, better.
You can repeat the explanations. So you can repeat some of the explanations. No, you can repeat some of the explanations which I have given. It's fine, because it's so important. Make sure that they all understand.
And then I'll do it in Tibetan. אוקיי, אז הראשון זה לא להרהר בעבר, לא לחזור ולעלות גירה על דברים שכבר קרו, ואז אנחנו חוות אותן שוב ושוב בהווה בתור מה שכביכול קורה והוא מאוד מאוד אמיתי, נכון? אז ה-habitual pattern, ה-habit pattern, ההרגל הזה של המיינד שלנו, ללכת לעבר כדי למצוא פתרונות, כדי לנסות לתקן, כדי לנסות לעשות את זה אחרת, בלתי אפשרי. העבר עבר, נגמר, לא אחזור יותר, וכל הניסיונות שלנו לעשות replay, אתם זוכרים את הטייפים שהיו פעם? היה לנו reward, לעשות rewind, אי אפשר. No possible, madam. זה הראשון. השני, זה אותו דבר הכפוך על העתיד. כן? כל המחשבות שלנו על מה יהיה, מה יהיה, מה הולך להיות, אם אני אעשה את זה, אז יהיה ככה, אם אני אעשה את זה, אז יהיה ככה. כל הסיפור הליניארי הזה שעושה לנו מאוד מאוד בטוח, ובעצם גונב אותנו מהזמן והמקום היחידים שקיימים. אפשר להגיד מפקיע את הזכות שלנו למשהו שהוא אחר, הרבה יותר חופשי. לא צריך עוד הסבר על זה, נכון? על העתיד? מה יהיה? מה יהיה? השלישי זה אותו דבר, רק על כאן ועכשיו. הדבר הזה שאנחנו קוראים לו כאן ועכשיו, אם אנחנו באמת נסתכל על ההווה, על הפרזנט, אנחנו מדברים הרבה על present moment, present moment. מה זה רגע? כמה זמן נמשך רגע? אפילו הרהור קטן על זה, ולמה טילמן הזכיר את זה קודם, אם אנחנו באמת מדברים על רגע, אז כאילו נדמה לנו שיש דבר כזה שנקרא רגע. איפה ההתחלה שלו? איפה האמצע של הרגע? איפה הסוף של הרגע? אם רגע היה באמת קיים, היו לו התחלה, אמצע וסוף. למשל, זאת אחת הדרכים הטיבטיות להבין את זה. אם היו לו התחלה, אמצע וסוף, אז הוא היה כמו שרשרת חרוזים, רגע, ואז היינו משחילים עוד רגע, נכון? אז היו לנו שני רגעים מושחלים על חוט, אתם איתי? ואז, מה היה קורה בין רגע לרגע? זה היה לא רגע? זה היה רגע קטנצ'יק שנדחף ביניהם? אתם מבינים שהאופן שאנחנו תופסים את הדברים, הוא לא בדיוק מחזיק מים, למה שנקרא המציאות. וכשאנחנו חושבים בצורה הכי פשוטה על ההווה, נדמה לנו שאנחנו ברגע ההווה, אבל אנחנו לא. אנחנו בעצם לוקחים וממחזרים חומרים או מעבר או מספקולציות לגבי העתיד, וחושבים על מה קורה עכשיו, כאילו אנחנו בעכשיו, אנחנו לא בעכשיו, אנחנו לא בכאן, אנחנו במשהו מאוד מאוד דמיוני. הרביעי מדבר על לא to analyze, לא להתחיל לחפור בדברים. לא להיות זה שחופר, סליחה בעד הסלנג, זאת אומרת, להתחיל, לחפור, so I'm like mixing argo with this, so it's like not to go into the drill, you got me, right? I sure do. להתחיל להסיק מסקנות מהחוויה שלנו. למה? לפעמים זה מאוד מועיל, אנחנו רוצים לדעת מה, איפה אנחנו, מה קורה לנו, מה קורה בתודעה, מה קורה... זאת יכולת מאוד מאוד טובה שיש לנו, להרהר, לחשוב, להבין, להסיק, אבל מה שקורה מזה הרבה מאוד פעמים, זה נוצק אני. אני הוא זה שעכשיו מתרגלת, אני היא זאת שעכשיו מתרגלת מדיטציה. ואז צ'ק, נהיינו משהו מוצק. נהיינו משהו מוצק, איבדנו את החופש. נהיינו בתוך התנאיה שהוא, וזה נורא נורא עדין, אפילו אנחנו, המקומות האלה שאנחנו מספרים לעצמנו, ישבנו כמה רגעים טובים ומתוקים, והנשימה הייתה שם, והיינו בנוכחות, ומיד משהו בנו קופץ ולוקח בעלות, ואומר, הצלחתי, המדיטציה שלי הייתה סבבה, מה זה הצלחתי, והדבר הבא שעולה זה, מעניין אם המורים שמו לב, ראו אותי, אולי מישהו שלידי שם לב, ואז, the meditator is here, יאללה, full power. אז לקחת את האנליזות על החוויה שלנו, חזרה to trace them back, לתת להם כמו להיספג חזרה, למקום שממנו הן באו, כי הן לא מועילות, הן כמו מכשולים על הדרך שלנו. וכשזה קורה, אז הדבר הבא שקורה, החמישי שקורה, זה do not meditate. שוב, המדיטייטור שנהיה כאן עכשיו זה עוד יותר ספציפי, כי לפעמים יש לנו ממש אג'נדה, עכשיו אני רוצה לתרגל את זה, עכשיו אני הולכת לתרגל מטה, עכשיו אנחנו מלמדים את זה ככה, נכון? עכשיו מתי עושים את הדבר הנכון לכל מצב, זה מאוד מועיל, אני רוצה להגיד, זה מאוד מאוד מועיל, וזה כמו גלגלי עזר, מתישהו אנחנו נרצה גם מהם, גם אותם להבריג החוצה מהאופניים ו... לתת לה, כמו שהוא דיבר על ה-inner guru, על המורה הפנימי, להיות נוכח יותר ויותר. אבל בהתחלה זה מאוד מאוד עוזר. ההנחיות האלה הם ללמות שהם ככה, כבר עשו את כל הדבר הזה ונפלו בכל הבורות, ועכשיו הם יכולים לשבת ולהגיד, don't meditate. אז קודם, meditate, improvisation on theme. מה שנשאר בסוף, שאנחנו עושים את כל האל תעשה הזה, אז נשאר הדבר הזה של leave the mind natural. אז מישהו בקבוצה אמר leave the room כמעט. אז זה פחות או יותר אותו דבר, אבל כמו לתת לדבר הזה שקורה באופן חופשי, כמו בלי ידיים, לא להרבב, לא לגעת. זה כמו שמכינים... עוגה, לא שזה יוצא לי אי פעם, אבל כנגיד מכינים עוגה, אנשים שמבינים בזה, נכון, יש דברים שלא כדאי לשים בפנים, כי אז כל הדבר הזה ייפול, נכון? כזה, no hands, לא לגעת. זה קורה באופן טבעי, זה החלק המדליק, זה קורה באופן טבעי שאנחנו שומרים על ה-five facets האלה, אז הדבר השישי פשוט קורה מעצמו, ולפעמים זה טוב דווקא להיזכר בו, לפעמים זה טוב לקפוץ ישר אליו, כזה לנוח ישר, אפשר להניח לתודעה שלי להיות כמו שהיא, אני לא צריכה לשפץ אותה, אני לא צריכה לסדר אותה, אני לא צריכה לארגן אותה, אני לא צריכה לעבוד קשה, אני לא המדיטטור that has to do this and that, אלא, אוקיי, אפשר לתת לזה להיות טבעי. מה זה להיות טבעי? אולי זה רגע אחד של להיות טבעי, ואז אנחנו נחטפים על ידי ה-habit patterns, ואז שוב פעם כל הגלגל הזה מתחיל מחדש, אבל הרגע הזה הוא רגע של מומנטום מאוד מכונן. ואת זה אנחנו מחפשים.
Thank you so much. Isn't that wonderful? I can have a rest, she talks.
I feel the same most of the time.
And I have noticed by the notes which you have written that some of you, at least with the written English, are not so much at ease, and yet and still you are here in the course. So maybe from time to time we can do like this, that Lila makes an improvisation on the same theme, and you can hear a second teaching with similar contents. Yes, it is. Maybe I saw some of you came more to life, you were like you could understand more directly. It is something very special to be able to receive the Dharma in one's mother tongue. Yeah, it's like hearing it directly in your own language, it goes deeper. So, and to hear it two times, it goes even deeper. Well, so we will see about that. I will hopefully feel that some passages can be done twice. That is never, it's never a loss of time. It's always wonderful. So now, no, I shouldn't have said time, because in my panoramic vision, I saw that Lila is immediately looking at the clock, but I'm very much aware, and there is something new which we tell you after the dedication. We will make a dedication. You know, there is no teaching without a dedication normally. I'm making adjustments with the situation here, but normally there's refuge bodhicitta in the beginning and the dedication at the end. So let's dedicate all the joy of this teaching or the understanding of this teaching. Let's, with a deep out-breath, dedicate that to the awakening of all. And then, of course, resting in the understanding that nobody was dedicating anything. that maybe in Tibetan, in Hebrew, you want to say? Yes, you can. Just this, that does this need to be translated somewhere? Really got the point? Nobody dedicating anything? Yes, you got it?
I think they all got it. אף אחד לא מקדיש שום דבר. אין אף אחד שמקדיש שום דבר.